Chapter 101. A few days after the famous presentation, another great and exceeding honor was vouchsafed to the virtuous Becky. Lady Stang's carriage drove up to Mr. Rawdon Crawley's door, and the footman, instead of driving down the front of the house, as by his tremendous knocking he appeared to be inclined to do, relented and only delivered in a couple of cards, on which were engraven the names of the Marchioness of Stang and the Countess of Gaunt. If these bits of pasteboard had been beautiful pictures, or had had 100 yards of Malin's lace rolled round them, worth twice the number of guineas, Becky could not have regarded them with more pleasure. You may be sure they occupied a conspicuous place in the china bowl on the drawing room table, where Becky kept the cards of her visitors. Lord! Lord! How poor Mrs. Washington White's card, and Lady Crackenberry's card which our little friend had been glad enough to get a few months back, and of which the silly little creature was rather proud once, Lord! Lord! I say, how soon at the appearance of these grand court cards, did those poor little neglected deuces sink down to the bottom of the pack? Stang! Barristers, Jones of Helvellyn! And Caerlon of Camelot! We may be sure that Becky and Briggs looked out those august names in the peerage, and followed the noble races up through all the ramifications of the family tree. My Lord Stang coming, to call a couple of hours afterwards, and looking about him, and observing everything as was his wont, found his lady's cards already ranged as the trumps of Becky's hand, and grinned, as this old cynic always did at any naive display of human weakness. Becky came down to him presently. Whenever the dear girl expected his lordship, her toilet was prepared, her hair in perfect order, her mouchoirs, aprons, scarfs, little morocco slippers, and other female gimcracks arranged, and she seated in some artless and agreeable posture ready to receive him whenever she was surprised, of course, as he had to fly to her apartment, to take a rapid survey of matters in the glass, and to trip down again, to wait upon the great peer. She found him grinning over the bowl. She was discovered, and she blushed a little. "Thank you, Monseigneur," she said. "You see your ladies have been here. How good of you. I couldn't come, before I was in the kitchen making a pudding." "I know you were, I saw you through the area railings as I drove up," replied the old gentleman. "You see everything," she replied. "A few things, but not that, my pretty lady," he said good-naturedly. "You silly little fipster. I heard you in the room overhead, where I have no doubt you were putting a little rouge on. You must give some of yours to my Lady Gaunt, whose complexion is quite preposterous, and I heard the bedroom door open, and then you came downstairs. Is it a crime to try and look my best when you come here?" answered Mrs. Rawdon plaintively, and she rubbed her cheek with her handkerchief, as if to show there was no rouge at all, only genuine blushes and modesty in her case. "About this who can tell? I know there is some rouge that won't come off on a pocket handkerchief, and some so good that even tears will not disturb it." "Well," said the old gentleman, twiddling round his wife's card, "you are bent on becoming a fine lady. You pester my poor old life out to get you into the world. You won't be able to hold your own there, you silly little fool. You've got no money." "You will get us a place," interposed Becky, "as quick as possible. You've got no money, and you want to compete with those who have. You poor little earthenware pipkin, you want to swim down the stream along with the great copper kettles. All women are alike. Everybody is striving for what is not worth the having. Gad! I dined with the king yesterday, and we had neck of mutton and turnips. A dinner of herbs is better than a stalled ox very often. You will go to Gaunt House. You give an old fellow no rest until you get there. It's not half so nice as here. You will be bored there. I am. My wife is as gay as Lady Macbeth, and my daughter's as cheerful as Regan and Goneril. I daren't sleep in what they call my bedroom. The bed is like the baldaquin of St. Peter's, and the pictures frighten me. I have a little brass bed in a dressing room, and a little air mattress like an anchorite. I am an anchorite. Ho, ho. You will be asked to dinner next week. And Garox Femmes, look out and hold your own. How the women will bully you. This was a very long speech for a man of few words like my Lord Stang, nor was it the first which he uttered for Becky's benefit on that day. Briggs looked up from the work table at which she was seated in the farther room, and gave a deep sigh as she heard the great Marquis speak so lightly of her sex. If you don't turn off that abominable sheepdog, said Lord Stang, with a savage look over his shoulder at her, I will have her poisoned. I always give my dog dinner from my own plate, said Rebecca, laughing mischievously, and having enjoyed for some time the discomfiture of my lord, who hated poor Briggs for interrupting his tete-a-tete with the fair colonel's wife, Mrs. Rawdon at length, had pity upon her admirer, and calling to Briggs, praised the fineness of the weather to her, and bade her to take out the child for a walk. I can't send her away, Becky said presently, after a pause, and in a very sad voice. Her eyes filled with tears as she spoke, and she turned away her head. You owe her her wages, I suppose? Said the peer. Worse than that, said Becky, still casting down her eyes, I have ruined her. Ruined her? Then why don't you turn her out? The gentleman asked. Men do that, Becky answered bitterly. Omen are not so bad as you. Last year, when we were reduced to our last guinea, she gave us everything. She shall never leave me, until we are ruined utterly ourselves, which does not seem far off, or until I can pay her the utmost farthing. It, how much is it? Said the peer with an oath. And Becky, reflecting on the largeness of his means, mentioned not only the sum which he had borrowed from Miss Briggs, but one of nearly double the amount. This caused the Lord Stang to break out in another brief and energetic expression of anger, at which Rebecca held down her head the more and cried bitterly. Could not help it. It was my only chance. I dare not tell my husband. He would kill me if I told him what I have done. I have kept it a secret from everybody but you, and you forced it from me. Ah, what shall I do, Lord Stang? For I am very, very unhappy. Lord Stang made no reply except by beating the devil's tattoo and biting his nails. At last he clapped his hat on his head, and flung out of the room. Rebecca did not rise from her attitude of misery until the door slammed upon him, and his carriage whirled away. Then she rose up with the queerest expression of victorious mischief glittering in her green eyes. She burst out laughing once or twice to herself, as she sat at work, and sitting down to the piano, she rattled away a triumphant voluntary on the keys, which made the people pause under her window, to listen to her brilliant music. That night, there came two notes from Gaunt House for the little woman, the one containing a card of invitation from Lord and Lady Stang to a dinner at Gaunt House next Friday, while the other enclosed a slip of gray paper bearing Lord Stang's signature and the address of Messrs. Jones, Brown, and Robinson, Lombard Street. Rawdon heard Becky laughing in the night once or twice. It was only her delight at going to Gaunt House and facing the ladies there, she said, which amused her so. But the truth was that she was occupied with a great number of other thoughts. Should she pay off old Briggs, and give her her conch? Should she astonish Raggles by settling his account? She turned over all these thoughts on her pillow, and on the next day, when Rawdon went out to pay his morning visit to the club, Mrs. Crawley in a modest dress with a veil on, whipped off in a hackney coach to the city, and being landed at Messrs. Jones and Robinson's bank, presented a document there to the authority at the desk, who, in reply, asked her how she would take it. She gently said he would take £150 in small notes, and the remainder in one note, and passing through St. Paul's Churchyard stopped there, and bought the handsomest black silk gown for Briggs which money could buy, and which, with a kiss and the kindest speeches, she presented to the simple old spinster. Then she walked to Mr. Raggles, inquired about his children affectionately, and gave him £50 on account. Then she went to the livery man from whom she jobbed her carriages, and gratified him with a similar sum. Andy, I hope this will be a lesson to you, Spavin, she said, and that on the next drawing room day my brother, Sir Pitt, will not be inconvenienced by being obliged to take four of us in his carriage, to wait upon his majesty, because my own carriage is not forthcoming. It appears there had been a difference on the last drawing room day. Hence the degradation which the colonel had almost suffered, of being obliged to enter the presence of his sovereign in a hack cab. These arrangements concluded, Becky paid a visit upstairs to the before-mentioned desk, which Amelia Sedley had given her years and years ago, and which contained a number of useful and valuable little things in which private museum she placed the one note which Messrs. Jones and Robinson's cashier had given her. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.